the community. Now, how much time have I got, by the way, of the overshot?
4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I just say a few words about the Swedish miracle, yeah? Because we keep being told, isn't it different in Sweden? You know, surely Sweden, that's where the future really works in Sweden. And defenders of state interventionalism, they praise Sweden to the skies. It's the envy of Europe, you know. And particularly Sweden is the paradise for women, particularly mothers. Women have all that wonderful childcare to put children into while they work. Every child has a place in a public daycare facility. Sweden knows about the good life, and it's got all the instruments to bring it about. Certainly Sweden has probably shown, of any state, has shown the most comprehensive political control of family life compared to anywhere else. It's just about made the biggest attempt in history to engineer equal outcomes between men and women, the freedom of women from child rearing, and the death, of course, of the traditional family through economic manipulation, social pressures, and public re-education. Now, the early on in Sweden was very influenced a great deal after the Russian Revolution by the same feminists that were influential in the early Soviet Union. They had a big input into Sweden, which they wouldn't necessarily had elsewhere. And this was revamped in the 1960s. It was there in Sweden, it was reinforced in the 1960s, where there was the firming up of the aim in Sweden to have a society where individuals were undefined by sex, marriage or parenthood, were never dependent upon anybody else, and all in continuous full-time work, regardless of their parental status. It was a society where there must be no right to choose between home and career at any time in life, and men and women must have the same obligations. So the Swedish state structured the tax system so that in order to drive all mothers out to work, there were added penalties on families. For example, if you had a non-working spouse, you got a smaller housing allowance than if you had two workers. And as the women families couldn't live on one wage, the women were pushed out to work, the resultant high female workforce was interpreted as reflecting women's preference for paid work over family work. There's only certain answers are at all acceptable in Sweden. The main help for families in Sweden was subsidised daycare. And subsidised daycare also offered all those opportunities to alter the personalities and the preferences of the sexes while the parents were engaged elsewhere. And of course, in this century, the remaking of the sexes in Sweden has been joined by the attempt to equalise sexualities, as in the UK. So books containing unsatisfactory or unflattering references to homosexuality in the bin, and people construed as making offensive remarks about homosexuality in the jail. Now, the reality in Sweden, the reality in Sweden is this, that socialised childcare in Sweden was achieved far more slowly than anybody had hoped. Not least because it turned out to be unimaginably expensive and a very, very inefficient way to look after children. The necessary resources, not least in terms of trained personnel, were simply not there. And despite daycare becoming the largest single item on many municipal budgets by the 1970s, and despite the very rapid construction of nurseries, the timescale for national coverage of all preschool children was continually revised. And you've got to give the Swedes this, that they were careful about monitoring the effects upon children. They did insist on quite a high level of professionalism for these child carers. And it wasn't long before any care for children under 18 months was tacitly abandoned. The babies, effectively the babies suffered from this. The outcomes were not good. And again, it was incredibly expensive. Human beings don't tend to have litters. They have them one at a time. And although Engels might have thought, and other people might have thought, isn't it so inefficient and uneconomical to have a woman looking after one baby? Surely you can have one. She's got six lined up there. You know, she can do that. Just think about it. It doesn't work like a production line. And Sweden was very hooked on the production line model of humans. It's like Fordism, you know, very popular in Germany in the 30s and in Sweden, the top-down command, the people living in the happy factory and the children reared in the cybernetic utopias, you know. Oh, well. And it's Sweden in the share of national resources absorbed by states, a very striking feature of the 20th century, and Sweden has led the field in this. From 1975 till 1980, real social welfare expenditure increased four times as fast as the economy as a whole. This meant a massive accumulation of public debt over time. This swelled to 78% of GDP in 1994, though it's fallen back since because there have been cutbacks. Even Sweden's had to have cutbacks and ceilings on expenditure. But the best years have long gone, and many people, economists now calculate there's been a tremendous loss in output in Sweden because of these enormous government expenditures. And that will be in the paper that goes out to you after this, some more detail about economic loss in Sweden. On the surface, Sweden has this very high employment rate. 70%, one of the highest in Europe. But much of it, as in my book on comparing Sweden to Italy and the UK, it's a Potemkin workforce. Lots of these people are not there. There are people on students, a lot of students who'd rather be working, people on sick leave, the women on long parental leaves, maternity leave, they're all included in the labour force. There's people on benefits, you get about 80%, if you're out of the job, you get about 80% of what you'd earn anyway. So there's not much encouragement there to work. There's also the effect, and I think we must remember this, of family policy. And you see this in Sweden and you've seen it in the UK, which is a massive drop out of men from the labour market. We had, in the UK around about 1970, we had about 5% of working age men inactive. They're not unemployed, they're inactive. Living on benefits, living on disability allowances. This is now in the UK 17%. And we've seen in the UK the surge in poverty, or below 60% of the median, in single childless people, again mainly single men living on their own. In Sweden, a third of the welfare caseload is single childless men. There's no incentive for these men to get work. The focus has been on getting the women into work. There's been this devaluation of the breadwinner. In the UK, breadwinners, the male as a provider, as a breadwinner, has been, he's been castigated for holding the woman back, for oppressing the family. And in Sweden, again, you've had this preference for women working and not men. The man, and for there's big subsidisation of lone parenthood. So there's men have no pressure on them to work. What happens, particularly in lower income groups where you may not have an intrinsically interesting job, you become a burden on the welfare instead. And I think the male problem of family disintegration is so often overlooked. In the Engels paradise, when all that bread was dropping from the hands of the great goddess and all the children were reared collectively and no child knew its own father, what were the men doing? They're just sulking behind the bushes or something. You know, what's happening here? What's happening? And just before I leave Sweden and this, what's happened over time in Sweden is that you've had an extension of parental leave, and you see this happening in society after society. They try the collectivised childcare, putting the children in the creches, right, or in the daycare, whatever you wish to call it. You put them there, it's going to be more efficient, it's going to be more economical, the women are going to go out to work and they'll be contributing positively by paying more tax, you know, the government's going to make a killing on putting all these kids in daycare and getting them away from their inefficient parents. And then they find, hey, it's terribly expensive, it's far more expensive than if people reared them at home. Where do we get the staff from? Where do we get the facilities? It's so expensive. They also find that the birth rate collapses because women don't usually have more than one child. That's really all they can cope with if they've got to take it to the creche, you know, and then they've still got to manage the family as well. People think, if you put a child, childless people tend to think, okay, that when you put a child in the daycare centre, that all your parental responsibilities are annulled. No. Think of all the management. Well, what you've got to do, right from looking to see if your children's shoes, oh, do they need larger shoes? I've got to take them out to buy that. I've got to do this. I've got to do that at home. There's still all that going on. And if you've got children of different ages, how do you take one to the daycare and take one to the school, do this, do that? You can't cope with it. So women don't have children if they got to bung them in the daycare centre. Soviet Union found this. The Soviet satellites found this. But their birth rate collapses. The women in the workforce, they have lots of sick leave because they get infections from, there's nothing more infectious than a daycare centre. Kids pick up the germs, they go back and give them to the parents. It's a very uneconomical way to rear children. Very uneconomical. Women won't have them. It's terribly expensive. There's a collapse in the birth rate. So what do you start doing? So what Sweden did was to give extended parental leave. You start paying women effectively to stay at home, but you don't call it family responsibilities, you call it a leave from work. You're still really there, but and this was extended and extended, a lot of it on nearly full pay, and also the eligibility period between having one child and having the next child was again continually extended in Sweden. So that effectively you can stay at home, if you have your children fairly close together, you can stay at home for 5 or 6 years on normal or nearly full pay. But in theory, you are in the labour force and your children are in collective care. Well, not quite. And you see this happen. You see it happen. You're seeing it happen in the UK now. We're getting parental or maternity leave extended now to a year. A lot of it on virtually full pay. We've also had day nursery places extended and people are not using them. Again, women won't put the children there. Sweden had a very low birth rate in the 70s. As soon as they start paying women to go on this long extended parental leave, the birth rate goes up. Soviet territories found the same as well. Now, Sweden is the next stage from that extended parental leave. The next stage from that is societies think, hey, look, why not just give the woman the money and let her get what care that she wants? Why mess about like this? Give them the voucher, or give them the money, the allowance, and they can buy their own care or they can buy somebody else's care. Just do that. Norway and Finland moved into that. Children under three, you get an allowance in Norway and Sweden. You can spend it how you like. You can use it to subsidise yourself at home, or you can use it to put your child in the daycare centre. Most women spend it using their own care. Now, Sweden, because they've got a different government, is starting to move in that direction. It's not legal yet. It may never happen. But they're starting to move towards a system where they will give women an allowance. It will be worth about a third of a daycare place, but it's the beginning. They will give women an allowance to look after their own children. If it comes into being, it will come into being about July next year. Now, the bad news is that Norway is maybe moving away, because they have a more left-wing government, maybe moving away from giving women their own allowances to spend as they wish, because again the leftist feminists don't like it, because the women have chosen to stay at home instead of them putting their children in the daycare centre. So we don't know, but there is this process: daycare, parental leave, give them the allowance to spend as they wish. You see this happening. All societies who go on the daycare path tend to lapse back in this way. So there we are. And just to an end note here, what are Swedish children like? Are they super kids with all that daycare in the background? Well, I've got to say this. First of all, if you're under one, there's hardly anybody, you're not likely to be in daycare at all in Sweden. The use of daycare in Sweden is grossly overestimated anyway, so think of that. But Sweden, of course, has quite high rates of cohabitation and lone parenthood as well. And remember that UNICEF report put them well below Italy. And for all their expenditure on welfare systems in Sweden, very high benefits, parental leave, creches, blah, blah, for all of that, there's more Swedish children now attempting suicide than 20 years ago. More are getting abortions, and more are having mental problems. And yes, for all the way it's been subsidised, and there's less poverty amongst lone parents in Sweden than elsewhere, because they do get very big allowances, the outcomes for lone parent children in Sweden are not as good as those from two parent families. You're getting the similar sort of bad outcomes that you see elsewhere. You've not eradicated that. So that's my end note there on Sweden, and the motto I think at the end is, don't try and get back into the garden. I think that Engels should have read Genesis.
We'll take just a moment for a couple of questions if anybody has them at this time. And I see somebody come up there already, so thank you.
You mentioned that Foucault and company, one of their thoughts is that parents should become no more legal conventions. Mm. One of the things that happened in Canada that people may not be aware of as they should is that subsequent to the Same-Sex Marriage Act, or whatever it's called, coming in, there was a change across all federal law that natural parent was replaced by the words legal parent. Mm. So you might have a thought as to what that will do to us in the long run.
I can say it makes children orphans. But Foucault says that reality is anything you make it. Hello.
You made many points that I agreed with and many that I did not agree with, mm-hmm. but I would like to pick up on one comment you made, which I felt was a very strong overstatement. Mm-hmm. You said that childcare, early child education, daycare, whatever you want to call it, causes aggression. Mm-hmm. That's not true. Rather, some studies have shown a correlation, and there may be any number of reasons why that is coming about. Some this aggressive behavior and some other negative findings, These behavior patterns might manifest at a later stage. So I think you need to qualify your remarks a little better in that regard.
I'm sorry, what do you say, manifested at a later stage?
Well, I'm saying, let's just take one issue, the whole issue of some studies have shown that children in daycare are more aggressive than children who stay at home. But that's a correlation, whereas you stated it as a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. I think that's an overstatement and that you need to qualify that type of comment.
I'm just saying that I think the studies that were undertaken in the US and the UK were extremely comprehensive. And particularly the one in the US, I was talking to Professor Belsky the other week about this, who were talking about this, that they asked, deliberately asked, all people who were very favourable to childcare, who had said before, when these things were starting to come out, I did a book in the mid-90s, we're already picking up aggression from children are more aggressive when they've been into group care, that was already emerging. And I know then that childcare, people who were very enthusiastic about childcare said, no, it's due to this, it's due to this, it's due to something else, blah, blah, blah. And deliberately in that American, so they tried to take on all these suggestions, what it might be. And in fact, they were asking these people who doubted the earlier results to put forward their hypotheses on this so that they could be tested. And I do think that overall, there's so much evidence in criminology and elsewhere that children are not terribly good for each other. I won't go to the anecdotes like Lord of the Flies, but children in groups tend to become rather aggressive. And they need adult, maybe, I mean, the only point I'd like to make here, and I think Jay Belsky made it as well, is that it may be the regime, a cultural thing maybe in the West, we have had rather permissive attitudes towards early education and child rearing, which tend to be a bit Rousseauian, you know, leave them and they're all spontaneously do this, that and the other, and let their interests lead their learning and all that sort of thing. And maybe adults are not interventionalist enough, and maybe if you had group care, which had a different ethos behind it, where adults were prepared to intervene and be far more directional and instructive, there might not be so much aggression. But I think it has come out of so many studies. It's a factor in criminology that groups are bad for children. Peers contaminate each other.
Well, you know, I think that's an overstatement, but my point is that these are hypotheses, and they shouldn't be presented as facts, as definitive. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's getting pretty definitive, except I said for that particular cultural aspect.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Patricia,
it's one of the very rare things you've got out of daycare, you know, studies. I think it's this aggressive trend.
I'd like to thank Patricia for her presentation today. We have a small token of our appreciation for your time and coming to join us from the UK.
Well, it's been very nice coming here, actually. I think I ought to.